This is Talking Business.
I'm joined now by Ben Walsh, who's the Managing Director and CEO of Mercer Australia and also the Chief Country Officer of Marsh & McLennan Companies, which is the American business that owns Mercer. G'day, Ben. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Alan. Good to see you.
How long have you been with Mercer?
Well, a long time, actually. 1994, I joined the group of companies.
Well, that is a long time.
Well, I was a graduate back in the day. I started on the insurance side of the business. And after 3 or 4 years, moved over to the superannuation investment side of the business. I was lucky enough to get some travel to the UK and to the US and have spent my entire working career with one employer, Alan.
Well, that is so unusual these days. Especially, nobody does that now.
No, that's right. And sometimes I feel a bit embarrassed about it, I have to say, particularly speaking to the young millennials.
Yeah, they must look at you as if you're crazy.
Well, I think they think that I've had a pretty good run. You know, as I say, I have been lucky enough to work in the UK and the US and in just about every division of the company. And that's pretty good experience.
Tell us in words of one syllable what Mercer does.
Yeah.
Well, you can use two syllables if you wish.
Thank you. Well, we are a pretty broad church. If I was to summarise it, I'd say we create better lives through the health, wealth and career of the global workforce. Doesn't help?
No. Come on. What do you do? What does Mercer do?
So we're very well known for actuarial consulting and investment consulting in this part of the world, as well as...
To super funds, right?
Yeah, particularly to super funds, but also to endowments and foundations like universities and others of that ilk.
You still got an insurance business?
Yeah, our sister company, Marsh, is an insurance broking business. Mercer has a health and life insurance broking business. Good business, helps employers think about employee benefits and how to improve the value proposition for their employees. And we, of course, have a big HR consulting business as well, Alan. So helping companies determine what they should pay their staff, what benefits they need, how they should structure themselves for success after mergers and acquisitions, as the C-suite is thinking about reorganising to achieve their strategy. So lots of moving parts. It's a big business. We have over 2,000 employees and a little over $500 million of revenue. So we're pretty proud of how we're going.
You were telling me before we started recording about a health scare you had a few years ago and how that changed your attitude towards customer service, which I thought was interesting and it's worth sharing, I think, with our listeners as to what that your brush with the health system did to your views about customer service.
Yeah, well, I was a young man, only 37 years of age, with a two-year-old and a young six-month-old. And essentially, I had bleeding on the brain, which was a complete surprise. Had not arisen due to an accident or an illness, just out of the blue, knocked me flat. And I found myself in the neurosurgery ward of a major hospital. And In fact, being woken every 3 hours and asked who the Prime Minister is and what time it is, he was very serious. And over the next sort of ensuing days and weeks, I was hospitalised a total of 4 times while the medical people who did a fabulous job worked out what the problem was and then went about fixing it. But the interesting thing was, as an intelligent person inside a hospital, pretty quickly you are dehumanised, notwithstanding the best work and endeavour of all the medical staff, whether it's doctors, nurses, administrators. You find yourself standing there in the gown, you know, the one where, you know, it opens at the back and you feel pretty exposed and you're moving from pillar to post and people are using scary language to describe, you know, what might be wrong with you. And as a lay person in that environment, it's very confusing. It's very hard to make decisions. And really, you do put yourself in the hands of the system. And I'm incredibly blessed. I came out of that situation with no mental deficits. My constitution was knocked around a little, I have to admit. But now, since 2009, I'm in a pretty good place these days. But what it did demonstrate to me as I think about the work that we do at Mercer is we are trying to be humanists in the way that we deal with clients and customers, because it is pretty easy, particularly in the superannuation industry, even that word itself, to use language which is specialist to people who are in the know, or to have specialists, whether it's actuaries or investment managers or administrators, that all have their own archaic processes and procedures. And individual customers and consumers of the superannuation industry, they don't understand all that. So we've been on a mission to create better lives by simplifying what we do.
But when you say, you know, you want to be a humanist as in customer service, what does that mean that you do differently, do you think, to others who are not being humanists?
Well, we do it both for ourselves and also for the clients that we serve. We try to make superannuation simple. We try to explain it in a way that is more readily understood. And importantly, we try to assist people to make decisions by having the information that they need at the fingertips when they need it.
But aren't your customers mostly big organisations as opposed to individuals?
Well, it's both actually, Alan. We have a superannuation fund where we serve about 235,000 individuals directly.
Oh, that's a few individuals. I'll give you that.
And we also serve large organisations, be it corporates, industry funds or the public sector. Almost 2 million individuals all up that we help make decisions around their super. And so that means huge investments have been made in the digital environment, in the customer experience, reviewing policies and procedures to simplify things. You know, it is a new world. We were talking about millennials at the start of the interview, Alan, and people these days, they want to just engage with their phone and they want to sit on their lounge suite with an iPad and make decisions really without the need for paperwork, certainly not like the old days in triplicate and those sorts of things. So lots of investments in that space, and also to help employers and ourselves and super funds with customer marketing and analytics, things to make information much more relevant and timely, to go to segmented parts of the membership rather than treating everyone the same.
So you've done a recent survey, I think, on superannuation funds. What did you find?
Yeah, it's interesting. It was a 2020 superannuation survey, looking out over the next few years to think about what are the big trends within the industry. We interviewed 41 executives representing $112 billion of funds under management and asked them, you know, the typical question, what keeps you awake at night? Some of the findings that were interesting really were about consolidation within the superannuation industry. It's a big industry. You know, there's more money in superannuation today that is in banking deposits in the banks. And it feels like it's almost grown up overnight to become such a big industry. Of course, it hasn't, but you can't help but pick up the newspaper today and see an article on super. And what has happened over a long period of time since 1992 and when the superannuation guarantee was mandated is there are many, many players within the industry. There's something like 240, what's called My Super regulated super funds. And the top 20 are very big. They each have in excess of $20 billion of funds under management. But the top 80 each have less than $1 billion, or the top 60 have less than $500 million of funds under management. So the survey asked them, how do they feel about size and scale and whether or not they think consolidation is likely to occur? And 68%, nearly 7 in 10 people said consolidation is inevitable in that part of the industry.
And is that keeping them awake at night?
Well, only 13% of them actually said that they felt that that would be something that would happen to their fund. It is interesting.
Because so consolidation is something that's going to happen to everyone else, but not me.
Exactly. And really that was a major finding that we took back to the executives. Time has moved on a little. We released this research only 3 or 4 months ago, and lo and behold, the regulator, APRA, has come out. And in fact, the current Liberal government is suggesting more powers for the regulator to potentially force closure of super funds.
But there are, surely you'd agree that there are too many super funds in Australia. Would you? I mean, they're all, you'd love there being so many because they're all customers, but.
Yeah, look, they are all customers, and even the small ones are incredibly passionate about their membership and genuinely have a heartfelt belief that they understand their members and many of them do.
Do you think it's possible, therefore, that maybe they shouldn't be consolidated? That the little super funds should continue to be specialising in their customers?
The regulator absolutely has said that there is room for niche players within the industry, and we have seen a number of startups as well that the regulator is open to. You are right, we do offer services to make it easier for those funds to exist. In some respects, we lend our existing scale to smaller super funds. We enable them to use our investment management or administration or governance services. They keep their trusteeship, they keep their brand, but essentially we offer ourselves as an infrastructure hub to the industry. But notwithstanding that, there is still too many super funds today, and the bottom super funds are starting to be written to by the regulator with essentially a please explain for why you should continue. And the regulator is moving to a member outcome test to actually have funds demonstrate not just that they know their members, not just that they have a good value proposition in terms of their niche part of the industry, but that they can demonstrate fees and services and investment returns that lead to better member outcomes, and we would support that.
Right. So do you think that there will be consolidation?
Yeah, absolutely. There will be, and there has been consolidation already within the industry. It's just been slow. It's been
Yeah, well, because none of them want to lose their jobs or lose their positions on the boards of trustees. They can't agree on who's going to be chairman.
Extremely passionate about the funds that they're involved with, Alan. Absolutely. But yes, it's inevitable that there will be consolidation. But we will assist those that continue to operate on a standalone basis, and we'll help some funds look at merger options and other strategic pathways.
We'll have to leave it there. But it's been great talking to you, Ben. Thanks.
Thanks, Alan.
I've been talking to Ben Walsh, who's the Managing Director and CEO of Mercer Australia.